Hey, welcome to the Vertical Church Ovilla podcast. I'm glad you're here with us. Our goal is to motivate and encourage you to live out real faith in your everyday life. So I'm glad you're here for this one.
Christians for far too long and churches for far too long have lived on the defensive. What do you have to say about that?
That's very, very true. In all of my life, it's not very long, but 26 years, it has seemed that the Christian position would defer to being defensive rather than offensive, because defensive is a holy thing. Offense is a secular, scary, bad thing.
Interesting. That's, I'd say for most of, if not all of my ministry, Christianity in the church has had that perspective to it. Maybe it's just the circles I was in, but it was more of, we need to be careful, we need to be on the defense because there's a big scary world out there, and therefore we need to put up our walls, put up our defenses and protections, because if we don't, then we're going to lose our children, and then we're going to lose ourselves, and the church will become corrupt.
Yeah.
So the interesting is there's some truth to that.
Yeah.
However, if that's the only position you've got, if all you play is defense, then
never, ever, ever scoring points.
You're not. No, you spend a lot of time in the huddle, overanalyzing, superanalyzing, and wondering why you're still losing the game. Mm-hmm. And it kind of feels like over the years, over the decades, that's kind of where the church has worked itself into, and a lot of Christians have worked themselves into, is let's make a checklist of all the scary, evil things out there and make sure we don't do them, protect our kids from them, and we're going to play this ultra defense mode, and it does not work. What you find is a generation who ends up in more confusion, in more addiction to sin rather than freedom from it. The very thing that they feared the most came upon them, and and we find ourselves in that place today. Thankfully, there is a change happening in the culture today, in the church, in the Christian church context.
Yeah. Again, I just think it's interesting, this defense versus offense mentality, because you're never learning how to vanquish something, but you have a million different ways to protect yourself from everything.
Right.
You're never having a solution to, here's how you defeat temptation, here's how you stand strong in persecution. But instead, it's like, run away from anything that could tempt you. Which is like, that's nice and good and truth.
Right.
But there has to be victory and a setup, a defense against.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. For some of my experiences, again, included this thing of setting up defenses. You know, don't look at this. Don't go here. Don't say this. Don't eat this. Don't practice this. And therefore, then you will be a good Christian. So anything that you did in your Christian faith, you did to greater heighten your defense posture. It was never toward an end of being a conqueror.
And I think that's fascinating, again, just in that idea. If you have defense, everything, but okay, well, what do you do if something slips past the defense and now it's made it inside and you're like, I don't know what to do with you.
Yeah.
I guess I'll just hide you, sins.
Yeah.
I guess I'll just be scared of you.
Exactly. Or then you turn to greater guilt and shame that you didn't do enough defense. Mm-hmm. That's what was usually the end result.
Yeah.
I guess I wasn't protective enough. I guess I wasn't fasting enough, reading enough, praying enough, and therefore I got caught. You know, I fell, I whatever. So yeah, so it totally goes against the truth that you find in Scripture where God creates Adam and Eve and he calls them to exercise dominion on the earth.
Yeah.
He didn't tell them to stay in the garden, you know, just protect themselves.
Yeah.
Just stay right there. There's this big scary world out there. You better buckle up.
Yeah.
And it's going to be tough. So, and now that you've sinned, you've really blown it. So you just better protect yourself because you're going to die. You know, that isn't what you find. Mm-hmm. And then you don't find that at all, even with the ministry of Jesus. When he is here, and then when the church is born, you find this same command. You find this command to go and exercise dominion, go into all the earth and do so with confidence and do so with a sense of conquering, exercising dominion and freeing people into the kingdom of God and bringing this kingdom so that his will is done on earth as it is in heaven. It's a much more aggressive, assertive, confident, take back what is lost. I'm going to pull down strongholds. And that's more of what you find in the Scripture, but that's not what I think we've seen in Christianity in recent decades.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think another verse that does support that offensive, the redeeming mentality is the verse from Ephesians 5. Look carefully then how you walk, and we are to be redeeming the time, for the days are evil.
Right.
You know, we're to be on the offense, redeeming rather than just running, fearing, honestly. Yeah. You know,
but and defensive posture Christianity, we read the same verse and we read it in a very different way.
So how do you defensively redeem time, though? Like, how do you redeem the time by being defensive?
You just better draw your bubble tighter. I'm serious.
Yeah.
That was the belief and the practice. Well, you better draw the circle a little bit closer in. Oh, you better make it tighter, and you better make the walls higher because the days are evil.
Yeah. Which
that was the emphasis. The days are evil.
That I was gonna say, that's the emphasis, but like for this generation, for my generation, I'm reading this like redeeming the time. So we are to be then changing, converting our days,
yep,
the time frame in which we live, to where it impacts other people. Because the days are evil, let's let's take on the evil. Let's attack. Let's go up against. Let's
oh, but
fight.
They're all evil though. Yeah. You're only going to redeem a little bit,
and that's and where again, like just, the
I'm
verses
so sorry,
of Jesus
know?
Is the light. You know, He is the light, and the darkness can't overcome the light. You know, but light overtakes.
But
the darkness.
But that was Jesus. That wasn't us.
Yeah, exactly. But we have the Holy Spirit, and so.
Yeah, but that's just inside the church.
Yeah. It's our responsibility. Exactly, yeah. I see how that goes down.
You see the thought process behind it. Yeah. We'll get to that. I think where we're headed today is a little bit of a historical review. How do we get to this place today? Yeah. We got to this, and so this will be an interesting journey.
Yeah.
So how far do you want to start back?
Well, I'll first say, like, our goal is for you, Christian, to say, hey, my goal is not to run away and just not sin, but my goal is to flourish.
Yes.
And to see, like, okay, Christ has made you for something.
Yes.
To redeem the times, to flourish, and to live and have influence.
Yes.
And be a disciple maker.
Yes.
Not just be a disciple.
Yeah.
And just follow Jesus.
Yeah.
But we are to be helping other people to be a disciple as well.
And a cultural transformer.
Yeah.
That is what we're called to.
That is the,
We're called to personally be more than conquerors. It has nothing to do with just sitting idly by or barely scraping by. No, that is advancing, taking back stolen ground, making a difference, being transformed in my own personal life. But then, as you said, yes, salt and light, which both bring transformation to the environment around it.
Yeah.
So yes, we should be transforming the culture.
Yeah.
But that has not always been the posture of Christians and the church.
Yeah.
So
doing a little bit of research for this podcast, I'm trying to see, where did this defensive posture start from? Where did it, when did it begin? When did it become popular? Mm-hmm. And some of the things I had seen was saying in the 20s to 50s, you really see a rise in, let's remove ourselves from secular, popular, worldly, not outright God-centered life. You know, let's remove ourselves. And part of the reason why some people say that this happened is because you have, like, evolution becomes very popular. It starts in the late 1800s. And so then you have science is trying to do all these, you know, things, make all these statements. And Christians are like, whoa, that's scary.
Yeah.
We can't let our families hear that stuff. So instead, let's create our own stuff.
Yeah.
Let's remove ourselves from what's out there.
Yeah. Then you get the Roaring Twenties, which is a time filled of just debauchery in the
nation. Hollywood and all this stuff.
Alcohol and sin. Yeah. It's a precursor to the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm.
So I get it. There's a sense of which why the culture has absolutely lost its mind. This is immorality. This is the world that Jesus talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And the evil one has his hand all over it. The prince of the power of the air is controlling. So yeah, I get the sense of pulling back.
Yeah.
You also come out of the 40s, 50s, in that era, there's war, there's the threat of communism, and there's the threat of let's protect and let's isolate and let's draw inside and, you know, the red threat, all those kind of things.
Yeah.
So I get that.
Yeah, that there's a sense of let's be defensive, let's be wary of what's around. And so what's interesting is then what it seems like is to retreat away from what was going on was courageous. It was courageous to say, we're going to be defending our people, you know, like there's a threat.
Yep.
So instead of like the mentality wasn't let's go and conquer, let's go and overthrow them, you know, yep. but instead, whoa, hold on. What's happening? You know, you kind of like you get knocked back on your feet.
Yeah.
You're off your feet, you know, and so you're, I am retreating for the sake of protection.
Yeah. You also have at the end of that, people are coming back from war. Mm-hmm. And they're settling down. There's a housing boom across the land. The baby boom is happening. Children are being born. Families are being established. People are going back to church. They're establishing church. And church is this somewhat semi-formal event, you know, a suit and tie and a pastor and choir and formalized faith is happening. It's very formal during this period.
Yeah.
So that has an effect as well.
Yeah, definitely. There was that sense of, okay, let's be faithful would be to protect what we have rather than let's try to go and influence the world and change all sorts of stuff. But like, hold on, let's protect what we have going on right here, right? Wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, I find it interesting that this passage from John 17:15 where Jesus is saying, he's praying to God on behalf of his people, on behalf of Christians. He says, I do not ask that you take them out of the world, but that you keep them from the evil one.
Right.
So he doesn't pray that we would be removed, but that in the midst of, in the face of persecution, whatever it may be, that we would stand through that, stand strong through that.
Yeah.
And so that...
See, defensive Christianity posture loves that, though.
Yeah.
Keep them from the evil one.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Now, okay, I feel
that's our role. Then,
I'm getting back in my bunker.
Yeah, exactly. You know? But I think it's interesting in this, it's Jesus praying that God would do that, that he would he would keep us, but that we wouldn't be removed from the world. We would still be in it, that we would still be around it.
Yep.
Like, that's what Jesus is praying, that we wouldn't just run away.
Yep.
But that we would be in, again, this is like the culture that I grew up in. That's the mentality, you know, is like that you would go and be a part and engage and influence rather than run away from it, right?
Yep, yep.
Fascinating.
Keep going, keep going.
So then you go from 20s to 50s-ish. Let's go to the 60s to the 90s, where you get some famous people, the Jerry Falwell Sr. He's a popular guy, and there's some other people around that time that lead a thing called the moral majority. I've heard that term used a lot, but what to explain it to people?
I mean, it's equivalent today to Turning Point USA.
Wow.
It's very similar.
Wow.
It's this, it's Christians around the nation rallying together to bring about even political change to some degree, to be the moral majority voice. And to no longer be isolated and withdrawn.
And that was like a slogan to identify people, or was it a group?
That was a group. It was called the Moral Majority.
Wow. Yeah.
Jerry Falwell leads that.
And
he's having an influence into culture, even politics.
Yeah. Wow.
And so the church at large.
That's their goal, is to then say, hey, we are putting a marked difference. Like, we are not like the rest of the culture. Right? Yep. We are... this majority of people, we are the moral people. We stand for God, for morality and all this stuff.
So you have some other factors going on.
Yeah.
Even before that, though,
you've
got the hippie generation going on in the early 60s, 70s.
Yeah. Sexual revolution and all that.
Coming off of this 50s, pristine,
super
raw,
rigid
little boxes, you know, living in our houses and our communities and our churches. Here comes this hippie, you know, generation where they're tired of the rigid, dad's always gone, mom's, you know, she's got her thing, plastic faith. So here comes a new generation, and they're growing their hair long. They're not neat and trimmed like their mom and dad's, and they're experimenting with, you know, marijuana and other things because they want a free life, not this rigid, structured life. So all that's happening out of the 60s, 70s, and they're coming into churches and not always received so well in that group because they don't fit. Your long hair and your bare feet and your bell-bottom jeans don't fit in our suit and tie and hat club. And so that's beginning to have an impact on the church.
Yeah.
Some struggling with it.
And I was going to say, it makes people retreat even more so. If you have, like, if you have hippies who are around, they're like, oh goodness, we got to draw lines even tighter. We got to cancel even more people. We got to close more people out.
Yep.
And then eventually you have the famous stories of Lonnie Frisbee, all this kind of stuff from California, where they start including the hippies into that. And so then there's this change in this realm at this point. But there's still a defensive mentality there. And so, like,
toward the culture.
Toward the culture, yes. Not towards hippies.
Those hippies are crazy people, you know, and they're from the world, and you got Woodstock going on.
All this
crazy music out there, and free love, free sex, and free drugs, all that stuff.
So
the church is still trying to protect itself from all of that out there. We can't let that stuff come in. They'll take our children, you know, if we let all that in. So Christian rock is becoming a thing in that era, and you know, God forbid that stuff ever made it into the churches. You know, you didn't want to do that.
You'd
lose all control at that point. So
but
the 80s and 90s are an interesting time, because to me what's happened is the church is starting to find its footing, but not so much in transforming the world around them, but as much as we're going to start creating our own world within.
That's very interesting. Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's different than kind of even what's happening today.
Yeah.
So in this era, churches start building what were called family life centers.
Yeah. Nice.
It was going to be this place where the church gathered to do all of life. You gathered to exercise, to share meals, to have Bible studies, to play games, to have sports. To everything, it was the family life center.
Yeah.
So you were creating this
everything that the world had.
Yep.
But just Christian.
Christian version. Yep. And so we're creating it inside. So now comes, you know, Christian music and again, so Christian activities.
Yeah, yeah.
And so now you lived inside the bubble.
Wow.
And so of course the world continues its path, and so the distinction becomes even more and more clear. Christian radio starts becoming more of a thing.
Wow.
Christian TV is popping up on these very difficult to find UHF channels, you know, late at night.
I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, sorry.
That's great.
Yeah. So, yes, this Christian subculture is forming. You also have the televangelists forming during this time, and they're some of them that make it big. They're building their own theme parks, their own version of Disney World, and their own version of Six Flags. And again, you're creating this Christian world.
Yeah,
but it's the world inside the Christian bubble.
Yeah. So I saw a line, a kind of a quote-ish describing this time, and it was saying that the church was defining itself more by what it was against rather than what it was for. Would you say that's accurate? What would you say kind of about
that? Again, yes, with the idea of we're going to recreate life inside our bubble. And we're going to keep ourselves inside it and keep our children inside it, because that out there, many began to believe was almost unredeemable now.
Yeah, yeah.
Politics had gone off the rails. You had Nixon and you had Watergate. You already been through the Kennedy assassination, and stuff is just off the rails.
Yeah.
Other people are being assassinated, and there's political upheaval.
Craziness.
So Christians, yes, they begin their retreat, and they're giving all of their information toward building the subculture inside.
Yeah. Wow. So what was... Because this is the interesting thing that I just, with this idea of like defense and offense, like where is courageness? What is the courageous? Who's the leader? And what's the, this is to be courageous in this time frame. Like what was the courageous thing to be doing then?
Well, again, internal, it became all internal. So you've got James Dobson, our heroes during this time period.
Yeah,
family is what it's all about. Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to raise my family, and I'm going to have a Christian culture. I'm going to have Christian groups that my kids are with.
Yeah.
They're not going to be involved in outside groups like Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts that had begun to turn a little bit. Now we're going to form Awanas, you know, inside our churches. And then the assemblies had their own version of that, Royal Rangers, you know, they had that as well. So again, the church is turning internal, and the heroes of the faith are those who are championing those causes.
Yeah.
To be able to, how do I create that Christian environments and context?
Yeah.
Even Bill Gothard, that's much of what he's championing is how do we have this Christian context inside we create our world.
Yeah. I mean, that's just fascinating, because it would seem like, especially during that time, if people are creating theme parks and all that stuff, you would think like, dude, this sucker's never ending. Like this, we're about to usher in the millennial kingdom of God here, because we
some
got
thought they were
Christian Disney World. That's awesome. You know, and Christian become very common everywhere, everywhere.
Well, the sad thing was, some of those Christians began to make lots of money.
Yeah.
Because people, older people of that era said, yeah, I support that. I want that. And you're throwing lots of money.
And so other
they're
people
giving
said,
online. And then those some of those people became very wealthy.
Yeah.
And then there was corruption.
And then it was, hey, I'll give you even more money if you just say this or just don't do this.
Yeah. And it just became too much.
Yeah.
And so
inauthentic.
It was inauthentic. Basically. It was very plastic. You go back and look at any of those people who were the televangelists of the day. It's very fake. And then, you know, pull back the curtain and you find out, yes, there's all kind of corruption and immorality and all these big name people turned out, man, there was rottenness at the core.
Yeah.
So all of that just crumbles.
Yeah.
All those theme parks crash and burn. And many of those movements end because of that.
So because of the like very prominent inauthenticity, you could say the all the money and all that stuff, there was a very popular shift then into the 2000s, especially of, hey, scrap it all. Just ground zero this sucker. And we're just going to go from, we don't need a church building. We don't need a hymn book. We don't need a piano.
Yeah. Now there's, again, before that, you kind of get in the early 2000s. Now comes the seeker movement.
Okay.
Because there's this realization, like the church realizes, we got to reach somebody.
We need to do something.
Because
I guess everything is internally focused. And so they're like, like you're saying, the church built towards just Christian.
Yes. Yeah. So then you have people like Bill Hybels and others. They start the seeker friendly movement. So they say, okay, we're going to go out into the community and we're going to survey people and say, if you were ever come to a church, what would you want to see there?
Wow.
And they just began to collect all the data. And this goes on for a while, late 90s, early 2000s. And some people become very successful at this, and they build churches around that. I'd like to hear music that's my style.
Yeah.
Okay. I'd like a laid-back environment where I didn't have to dress up. Okay.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear topics related to my life. Okay. I'd like for there to not be condemnation and a lot of scary talk about how bad I am. Oh, okay. And so they began to build entire ministry movements around that, and it worked as far as drawing numbers.
Drawing numbers.
And so that movement begins very felt needs oriented. You got a need, we're going to address it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to keep it soft. We're going to keep it light. Music's going to be fun. It's going to be upbeat. It's going to be relatable. You can come in your tennis shoes. You can come in your bare feet. And we do stuff in the park. We do stuff in the auditorium. But the auditorium is not real highbrow. It's not real, you know, old school. It's very open. It's very light. It's very relaxed, and the colors are rich, and you're welcome to come, kind of deal. So that's early 2000s.
So then the reaction then to that, would you say, is where people are like, okay, that is all super, still looks inauthentic, but it's authentic.
Yeah,
but it's drawing large numbers.
Drawing large numbers, but now because there was a lesser stance on truth.
Yeah,
they didn't want to deal with sin necessarily because that was too confrontational. That was going to cause people to not want to come around. So then the church internally begins to struggle.
Well, that's interesting though, because it seems like then around this time you have that it's no longer as retreatist defensive mentality.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that there would be a shift around this time. If you're saying people are saying, hey, what makes you want to come to church?
Right.
And you're approaching a random. You're approaching someone who might or might not be a Christian.
Yep.
But they're trying to say, what makes you want to go to church?
Yep.
It seems to have shifted away from defensive, not toward offensive.
Yeah.
Particularly.
I think the difference is that people were, it was still, the church was focused on building the church.
Mm-hmm.
It's still, I'm going out to build this internally.
Yeah, yeah.
There was never this sense of we're going out to transform the culture.
Yeah, interesting.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We'll go reach people and we're going to create programs and have ministries that will draw people in.
Yeah.
For the purpose of just continuing the in crowd kind of deal.
Yeah.
You didn't really have this, I'm going to penetrate the culture and try to transform it, to transform entertainment industry and the government and the culture itself as a whole, the mood and thought processes of the culture, that was all kind of appeared to me to at least to be lost. And now the focus was on just evangelism as evangelism.
Yeah.
We'll go share the gospel with people, invite them to church, And that's really the prime directive.
Wow.
The idea of that turning into, we're going to try to get involved in government. We're going to try to get involved in politics, in industry, in colleges, mm-hmm. in grassroots movements of restoring the culture to bring yeah. back what was lost. There were some that were doing that, but it was not the overall message of the church. So still, the overall message of the church was, come to us. We've got this life inside the church that can help yeah. you deal with all the mess out there.
Mm. And what was the result, would you say, of the church at large through the 2000s, maybe the 2010s-ish, mm-hmm. that was, what was the result of the comfort era or the bringing people in, and what was courage there? What was like, mm-hmm. man, that's a leader. That right there is someone to follow. What was courageous?
Yeah. Of course, then you start getting people early 2000s who are trying some different things with church. Mm-hmm. They're experimenting once again because the church overall knows it's still kind of losing the battle. There's not as many salvations, baptisms.
Yeah.
Membership is declining across all spectrums of church
yeah.
and Christianity and religion in America. So you have leaders who are attempting to do something different. They're creating a church, different church format. So now start coming, you know, projectors and lighting changes in the building and music styles change again.
Yeah.
And there's even a greater emphasis on, you know, coming to the church and this appeal that, we'll go with, say, an Ed Young in Grapevine.
Yeah.
You know, it's coming, and they're building this church model that is just so stunningly different than anything that was traditional or even contemporary at the time. It has this show feel to it, but it has this massive draw because they're like, now that is different.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a call to evangelism. There's a call to come to know Jesus, and this Christianity thing, it can be fun. You know, so mm-hmm. you find a lot of that, but again, you're still building the internal rather than trying to bring transformation to the external.
Hmm. Yeah, that's really good. That's very interesting.
It is. It's just interesting how that all, what that turns into. And if there's anything between then and now, I think we're kind of in this flex.
I was going to say, I think around 2020, a lot of change obviously takes place.
Yes.
You know, it's definitely, seems as if there was a split there, you could say, you know, yep. of like, let's continue comfort to a further degree, mm-hmm. even to the point of like, who kind of cares? Like, more like, I'm not going to take a stance on something. I just want people here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So because you is good. You know, yeah. having people is a good thing.
And then, you know, add in some threats from people out in the world, from government,
yeah.
church. Don't dare talk about politics. You mm-hmm. better stay off of this ground. This is not yours.
Yeah.
You stay in your corner, basically. Mm-hmm. You could lose your tax-exempt status, and you're playing outside the bounds. Separation of church and state, you know, they claim.
Yeah.
And so that you're right. 2020 happens. You've got COVID, George Floyd, turmoil in the country, statues of our heritage and history being torn down across the land,
yeah.
and like people are trying to figure out what are we,
yeah.
what is going on, and what are we going to do?
Ultra affirming churches versus like
yes.
where do you stand on LGBT and all that?
Yeah, and Black Lives Matter,
yeah.
all of that. It becomes a stake in the ground moment, though. It's a dividing yeah. factor.
Yeah,
and something begins to tear at this point.
Yeah. And I think what has happened at that point, you know, 2020, COVID, all this kind of stuff, you have, okay, are you going to continue to just be defensive?
Mm-hmm.
Like retreat, pull away, I'll just do our own thing.
Right.
Or do you go, hey, we're taking a stand against that.
Yes.
I'm actually, as the church, we are against that.
Yeah.
And we're for this.
Yes.
So yes, we're against, but here's actually what we're for even more so.
Yeah, and the church now, 2020 forward, not all of it, but much of it, some of it, I will say, begins to say, wait a minute, we have something to say
yes.
about these shutdowns,
yeah,
about this COVID vaccine,
yeah,
about George Floyd,
yeah,
about what's happening in the culture. We have something
freedoms,
to say about this.
Liberty, yeah, exactly.
And the church begins to wake up
yep.
in this moment.
Yep, we are for our God-given rights rather than just
yes.
don't infringe on us. Well, hey, get this. We're actually going to be opposing you, and we're going to be attacking. We're going to be going back, you know, and we are going to actually set up against evil in our culture. Yep, you know,
exactly.
Like right now you see Russell Johnson in at the Pursuit Northwest in Seattle, and they're hosting worship nights knowing we are opposing darkness. Like mm-hmm. we're doing this for the sake of opposing spiritual darkness in our region.
Yes.
That's what we're doing.
Yeah.
It's not just, hey, everyone come get together at our church to get away from all the craziness of Seattle.
Yep. Yep.
But they're like, we're going to go against Seattle
right.
as the spirit of what it is, you know?
Yeah, and Christians and churches begin to find their voice. Like, wait a minute, we can speak to the issues on the ballot.
Yeah.
We can speak to the issues and should in the culture. We shouldn't just teach the Bible as a separate set of information, but a truth that is our foundation for not just our spiritual Sunday life, but our everyday life and our nation. And then there's a return to like, wait a minute, this nation was founded upon the scriptures. This nation was founded in truth and the belief that Jesus Christ was Lord. And so there's a return to that right now.
Yeah.
And again, the impact of Charlie Kirk visiting college campuses and many, many others who are in that type of ministry and work, you're beginning to see they're beginning to take back stolen ground.
Yes,
they're beginning to take back lost ground, surrendered ground, and begin to pull down strongholds. Oh. And you have seen a change happen in the country and the nation. A change happened through the election. We saw this. We see this through the death of Charlie Kirk. People are even finding more footing. And we're back into a place, finally, it appears, where there is this sense of, wait a minute, we're not going to be on the defense always. We have a defense, but we have an offense.
Yeah.
We are attempting to transform the culture, to take back actively what has been lost. And this is where a new breed of Christian has arisen. And I think we've yet to see the full impact of
this is going to mean.
Of like, this era. Yeah.
Exactly. Like what is 5 years from now of people who say, we're not retreating anymore.
Yes.
We're not going to surrender ground anymore, but we're going to take it back.
Yes.
You know, because like, that's the thing. It's terrible and heartbreaking. You look around at every major city. Inside it, you'll see hundreds probably of churches that are big, nice, fancy, all this stuff. But internally, it's like, hey, here's our ultra woke. Here's our gay, our lesbian, you know, Christian leader.
Soft. We're not going to offend anyone.
Yeah. And it's like,
all are welcome.
This used to be a church at one point in time that was established to say, we're going to stand for Christ and we're going to proclaim Jesus as King. And we're going to make disciples that follow him.
Right.
And it's been surrendered ground and it's caused retreat and retreat and retreat, you know. And I think that tide is quickly shifting to like, we've got to get back into and take back the things that we've surrendered.
Yep.
And we can't just live like this anymore, you know. And as much as that's true, physically, we're seeing that happening. Like we're seeing that happening at Vertical here spiritually, where people have surrendered ground in marriage. Oh, hey, this is never going to reconcile. Oh, hey, you know, my relationship with this child's never going to reconcile. But instead, we're seeing, instead of retreating from problems, like, oh, I could never confront that family member.
Mm-hmm.
They're always going to toxically run our get-togethers and all this stuff. Not anymore.
Yeah.
No.
And even on a very personal level, instead of people saying, oh, this is just the addiction I have, this is just the trauma I have, this is just where I am in life, there's no way I'm going to get past this. No, people are hearing truth and they're discovering, wait a minute, I am called to be more than an overcomer in Christ. I can have healing from my traumas. I can have victory over this sin, this temptation, this addiction in my life.
Yeah.
And that's happening. And I think in the churches in our land today that are taking this assertive, bold, offensive, truth-speaking platform, they're the ones that God is using today. It's the spirit of this. It's where the spirit of God is working in this age.
Mm-hmm.
And so we see this in churches. I think we see this, again, in individuals. They're finding their freedoms. They're finding their responsibilities. And it's happening in homes as well.
Yeah.
It's happening for marriages. It's happening with parents and children. It's happening in school districts.
Yeah.
This revival, this transformation is happening where we're turning into a revolution where people are like, wait a minute, that's happening in our local school. I'm going to get involved on the local school board. I'm going to attend some meetings. I'm going to speak up so that this doesn't continue.
Yeah,
the transformation exactly. is continuing, and we've yet to see the full effect of it in our
generation. Into the culture. Yeah, exactly. And that, because that's the thing I was going to say as well. Like, we're not just about like, oh, hey, let's manage like this weird, like we're just be defensive only and we don't know how to deal with sin actually. We're just going to hope to not sin a whole lot.
Yes.
That's so garbage. It's so, it sounds real nice at first. It sounds like, hey, I want to sin less. Cool. Mm-hmm. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
But what that requires is saying, I've been made new.
Yes.
I have the Spirit living in me.
Yes.
I have the light of Christ in my life.
Yes.
And I will be disinfected by the sun, you know, like by the sunlight that will wash me clean. Yep. And I don't have anything else to fear anymore.
Yeah. And I don't need a bunch of rules and legalism to keep me safe from temptation and sin.
Yes.
I've got the Spirit of God within me.
Yeah. And people I will follow.
They're learning to walk in that.
Yep.
And they're discovering, wait a minute, we were called to be the head and not the tail. We were called to be salt and light. We were called to be the pillar and the foundation of truth. And so people are standing up into that, and the church is beginning to flourish as a result of that.
So maybe it would be good to end with this question for, like, let's just say the person who fears sinning more than they have a, like, and awareness to pursue righteousness. Like, what do you say to that person who's more like, I don't want to sin, you know, like we want them to pursue righteousness. What do you say to that person?
Yeah. So the Apostle Paul said it in a very succinct phrase that to me stands as the principle and the truth in which all this stands. Walk in the Spirit and you will not fulfill the lust of the flesh.
Yeah.
If you try to make it your goal to not fulfill the lust of the flesh by putting together rules and laws and boundaries and safeguards, you will fail every time, and all there is waiting for you is more guilt and more shame and the need for more rules and laws, and which leads to more failure and more shame.
That's
but
gross.
If you'll walk in the truth of who you have been made in Jesus Christ, that he really has disarmed principalities and powers through his death on the cross and his resurrection, and you have that. You've been seated with him in heavenly places. You've been raised to walk in newness of life. You no longer have to walk in your flesh and your guilt and your shame, but you can walk in the newness of righteousness. You can be a transformed man. You can walk in all that. That is where people are finding their power and their strength, and they are learning to overcome.
So good.
That's what we should be walking in individually, in our families, and in our churches today. I mean, you think about what this means for a family.
Yeah.
Some parents who say, okay, God has given us these children. We're going to raise them up to be warriors in this generation. And I'm not going to live in this defensive fear posture all the time.
Yeah.
I'm going to equip them, train them, speak truth to them. Bless them, help them to know the blessings of God so that they walk into this world equipped, trained, armed, and ready with a vision and a purpose and a power.
Mm-hmm.
You can walk through the valley of the shadow of death with that and
that's
fear
true.
No evil.
Yep.
That's what we ought to be creating.
Yeah, that's so good.
Instead of a generation who walked through the valley of the shadow of death and feared everything that was in it and fell to it as a result.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm excited. What a day to be the church.
So good.
What a day to be a believer and seeing that turn happening in the church. And I pray for more of it, a more aggressive, assertive, confident, bold posture. This is where victory is. So
love it.
Yeah, it's a fun review of history and assessment today.
Yeah, it's great.
It's good. All right. Well, thanks for joining us today on the podcast. Hope that is helpful for you as you think about what God has called you to be, what Jesus has made you to be. You were not destined to live in defeat, in shame, in hiding, in uncertainty, and insecurity. You are meant to walk in the light as he is in the light and be more than a conqueror. So come join us at Vertical, see that happening here, and see how you can be a part of God's movement here in this place. Thanks for joining us.